Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoucy, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, big week in movies. Possibly one of the biggest weekends in cinema history. And don't let the AV Club fool you as far as pairings. There's never been a pairing like this weekend. They wedged a few in there that were forced. The one I could see, and I did not even realize, and I was alive then, that Smokey and the Bandit and Star Wars opened the same weekend. Both did well, one particularly well. So anyway, I did get to see Oppenheimer and Barbie, not in the same day. So if you can do that, do it. I still recommend seeing Oppenheimer first. It's longer. It's darker in tone. I know that the counter argument is it might stay with you so much it would interfere with you watching Barbie. No, Barbie's that strong a film that you can go into double feature mode. That's what double features are for. So, and I know the last couple of years, Tom Cruise has been waving the flag about going to the movies. Of course, he had a huge act in that last year with Top Gun, and he's doing it with this. So if you can see it as a double feature, obviously do so. And this is the right time for Christopher Nolan. I know he was very adamant about putting Tenet in theaters, and it wasn't worth it. So I did not see Tenet on the big screen. I wound up renting it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I did this. But got to see Oppenheimer on the IMAX screen. It was shot in 70mm IMAX. If you have the opportunity to see it on the IMAX screen in 70mm, do it. Nolan's just that good of a writer and director. Of course, it is the story. Cillian Murphy plays J. Robert Oppenheimer, and it's a little bit of his story. It's a little biopic or biopic, but there's also obviously a big chunk of him making the bomb, Fat Man and Little Boy. And we're not that film, not the Roland Joffe film with Paul Newman. But with Christopher Nolan's work, we do get some nonlinear storytelling. But if you know his work enough and you've watched the films of Quentin Tarantino, it's not that big of a distraction. He's used it well in films like Memento, and I didn't mind it in Dunkirk. And in this one, we get early on his years of moving up the ladder, and along with a really strong supporting bench of players we'll get to in a bit. And then we get the huge middle section about the creation of the bomb and the town in which they build it. And then the last, I thought that the film would dip after we had the testing of the bomb. Instead, we get a fairly riveting, courtroom scene. There is a hearing about whether he should continue to have a security clearance that plays like a courtroom drama. This is probably the fastest 3-hour film I've seen. And I guess kudos to Christopher Nolan, as well as to the editor, the strangely named Jennifer Lame, L-A-M-E, and checking to see what else Jennifer had worked on was an apprentice editor on Before the Devil Knows You're Dead and Reservation Road, second assistant editor on The Lovely Bones, was an additional editor on Midsommar, Judas and the Black Messiah, Don't Worry, Darling, and Blonde. So this is, I guess, their first time as main editor. Oh, they also did Tenet, Tenet, Marriage Story, Hereditary, and Manchester by the Sea. So really good credits, and it moves. There's a little dip, like I said, after the testing of the bomb, but we get into the transition of the courtroom scenes. Early on, we get a look into Oppenheimer's head where he sees images of lights and lasers and shadows. And at first I thought, oh my, Christopher Nolan is imitating Terrence Malick. And is it going to be like this for 3 hours? It isn't. And then once we get to the second, like the final third, it's a lot of black. There's a lot of flashbacks in black and white, especially involving Robert Downey Jr. Is it going to turn into JFK? Not quite. But it gets close as far as tone and look. But I was really, really caught up in the story. As I mentioned, strong bench. Matt Damon, Robert Downey Jr., Kenneth Branagh, Tony Goldwyn, Jason Clarke. Florence Pugh and Emily Blunt are in this. Blunt plays his wife, plays Oppenheimer's wife. Pugh plays his lover. Not a lot for each character to do, I should say. Although Emily Blunt gets one great scene in front of the committee as far as a security clearance, it might be good enough to get her a nomination. But other than that, it's a lot of non-action for the ladies in this film. So there is that. Cillian Murphy handles everything with great strength on his shoulders. And, so it really works. I really found myself wrapped up. I had not been crazy about Christopher Nolan's last couple of films, Tenet and Interstellar. And I was really, really happy about it. I did like Dunkirk, so there is that. Anyway, so go see it on a big screen if you can. It's worth it. That being said, I then switched into Barbie. So I saw I saw Oppenheimer on Tuesday and then saw Barbie on Wednesday. I thought all of the theaters had been sold out. So this is the world that I live in. I couldn't see Barbie on Thursday. They always do the advanced screenings, the night before they open. And Mrs. Sosi and I had plans already for Thursday night, so we couldn't do that. And there was a single 7 p.m. screening in theaters on Wednesday. And I checked all around the city and thought they were all sold out. And then I found one at a Regal Cinema in Greenwood. But it did turn out I had to sit in the second row. So it looked like Attack of the 50-Foot Margot Robbie, which I wouldn't mind directing. So Greta Gerwig directs this, co-writes it with Noah Baumbach. And we've had a number of films about products. We talked about Air, of course, the Lego movie, film that Eva Longoria directed about the Flamin' Hot Cheetos. And now we have Barbie, a Mattel film. And in this, we get that there are two worlds. There's the Barbie world, and then there is the real world itself. And what happens when the two worlds meet? And Barbie and Ken wind up going into real-life Los Angeles, and things are not what they are in their realm. And it, much to her detriment and much to his, maybe finding a place in being more than just Ken, which is kind of, in the Barbie world, is kind of a secondary character. Really fun performances from both, and Gosling gets to make fun of his kind of hunky image and the Ken image. Also, really good cast of players. Helen Mirren's the narrator. America Ferrara shows up, and we find out when somebody is sad, that's where Barbie starts having moments of doubt and uncertainty. Kate McKinnon is in this as well. The film's a shoo-in for a nomination for best costume design. I mean, it's all pink and fun and silly. Imagine, if you will, the Lego movie And it's similar in that storytelling as far as in the Lego movie, it's about do you follow the rules or do you create your own art? Do you create your, you follow your own creative path? And in this one, it's the gender roles. And are you allowed to feel? Are you allowed to not just be happy 24/7, 365? And that addresses this in here. And it works out well. And there is a bit where when Ken discovers that in the so-called human world, men are have a lot more pull, which comes into a problem in the Barbie world, Barbieverse. The one flaw with the film is there is a whole section with Will Ferrell, who is the CEO of Mattel, and they keep hammering it in, I guess. Of course, it's their production, I suppose, just like Transformers is a toy, basically produced by a toy company. The whole Will Ferrell section can go away for me. The film's probably, I think, an hour 40. I'm sorry, hour 54, and you could have streamlined this and not have to deal with the Mattel CEO suits chasing the dolls from one land to another. That could all go away, but of course, it's Mattel. They're going to keep it in. So that's probably the one sacrifice Ms. Gerwig and Mr. Baumbach had to add into the script, but it's not needed. It's a lot of fun, and we get enough jokes for the kids to enjoy. And I guess that's the other question. Somebody had asked, is it okay to take your kids to this? I think so. You might have to explain beaching in a way. There is one, and you see it in the trailer as far as wordage between the guys. But, that's what parental guidance is for. I don't think it's trying to go too far in that direction, into the adult direction, the grown-up direction. So, you could do a lot worse out there. But this was a fun palate cleanser after seeing Oppenheimer. So, I wish I could do the double feature. If you do, please let me know when I ask for questions next week. And by the way, just a friendly reminder, don't tell me what you're gonna see when I ask for it. Tell me what you have seen. So just a little gentle reminder there. But and I wonder also if there are still folks, I'm sure there are, I just don't know if there are any who listen to this show or go online, who have not returned to the movies yet. And will this double feature or singles, either one, will this be the one that brings you back to the theaters? So, but yeah, I recommend both strongly as individuals and as you do the double feature. Again, let me know if you do the double feature. That would be very, very cool. Thank you. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. I got a couple more notes before we find out what I've been watching on a video. Then we'll go around the horn and then we'll grab a pencil. The sound in Oppenheimer, I forgot to mention this. I was prepared, seeing it in IMAX, I was prepared to have my eardrums blown out. And I'm happy to say that was not the case this week. So if you can see it, obviously on IMAX, do so. The biggest sound moment for me in the film is, and it's not the testing of the bomb itself and the use of bomb, the use of the explosion and footage to go with that is really effective. There's a delay once there's impact and then it travels. But the biggest sound moment is there was a party / rally done by the camp after the successful test of the bomb. And that is more jarring than the bomb explosion itself. So you'll note it when you see it. So, but yeah, kudos to the sound design on this, as well as the score. The score is relentless. I know it's not Hans Zimmer, and if you actually listen to 1A on these NPR airwaves, they interviewed the composer on Thursday. So check that out. Barbie, I mentioned, should be a lock for best costume design nomination. Also, set design, production design. It's, captures that world. And there's two lovely moments involving Rhea Perlman. And I don't want to give anything more out of. Just you'll see it. You'll notice it when you see it. But it was very, very sweet. Okay. We're going to shift gears a little bit, find out what's going on video, and then we'll go around the horn and we'll grab a pencil. A couple of Kino Lorber titles. And these are titles either I haven't seen in a long, long time or I've never seen before. I had never seen the 1964 French crime drama Joy House. This stars Alain Delon, Jane Fonda, and Lola Albright. And that's a handsome trio right there, directed by René Clément. Delon is a con artist who is on the run from the from American mobsters, and he has been he's living in France, and he's been the mobsters are out to drag him back to the U.S. for what he did to the mob boss's wife. And along the way, there is he winds up in the hiding in a house that's run by two American women, played by Fonda and Lola Albright. There is a great chase scene in this film, and I need to watch it again, involving Alain Delon, a skidding car, and a moving train. It was very effective, and I got to hear the commentary track on that to see how they pulled that off. But while Delon's character is hiding in a church, a priest organizes two of the female volunteers to hide Delon in a villa. And these are Fonda and Albright. And it's not as cool as it sounds, being hidden in a villa, posing as a chauffeur with two beautiful blonde ladies from 1964. It becomes much darker as the film goes on. And it's a really nicely done cat and mouse love triangle between Delon, Fonda, and Albright. So, but yeah, check out Joy House. That's on Kino Lorber from 1964. And this is a film I had never heard of. It's a pre-code film from 1932. It's a compilation film called If I Had a Million. And the plot stems around a business tycoon who is dying. And the question becomes, who is he going to leave his money to? He does not want to leave his money to his ungrateful family. He does not want to leave his money to the company because he thinks nobody can handle the money better than he. So instead, he chooses eight random strangers and is going to give them $1 million each via a check, via a courier. And these are basically eight short films. And when you have a compilation like this, it's easy to grade them, and you know it's like when you do two dishes on Food Network. One might cancel out the other, so you're taking a risk if you're doing eight short films. And I'm happy to say that the eight short films, and it deals with separate individuals and what happens to them under the circumstances when they have a chance to have a check for $1 million. They range from very funny to very sad. Their first story, we have an accountant who is, for some reason, working on the main floor of a department store with his he goes home to his nagging wife. His boss is on his case. And there's some just desserts. We have a barfly singer named Violet Smith who is able to finally go to a fancy hotel by herself and not have to spend time with a man. And we know it's pre-code because we see her in states of undress before going to bed. We have a car thief and a con man, and he has the money, but he is on the run, and he can't even cash it at a bank because he's got a wanted look on it, wanted poster with his face on it. We have a woman who owns a tea shop who is married to W.C. Fields, and a great revenge moment on reckless drivers. We have a gentleman who's on death row thinking he now can afford a good lawyer, a proper lawyer, and get out of jail. We have my favorite, and it's directed by Ernest Lubitsch, and it involves Charles Laughton, and it's simple, and I laughed harder. This was the biggest laugh I've had cinematically all year. Bob Bloom and I were talking. The W.C. Fields one is his favorite. That is probably number two for me, but the Charles Laughton one is my favorite. Then we have one involving Gary Cooper as a Marine in a brig with two other guys, and they're all vying for the affections of the snack bar girl, and what happens when that check comes along. And then finally, a woman who lives in an old ladies' home with a very overbearing director, quite like Nurse Ratched with less sadism, and what happens when she's able to change the rules around the old folks' home. So anyway, it's a really delightful evening of cinema. It's only about 80 minutes or so, and there's because the short films are to the point, and it doesn't really. And the ending with we go back to the business tycoon, and that part it's just kind of an afterthought, but it's fun to watch these short films, and they're all, like I said, they're all ranging from very good to excellent. So I'm happy to say that's a. This was a film that was so good, I decided to stop watching videos for the week. Between Oppenheimer and Barbie, whatever I see, what I was going to put in next was going to be pale in comparison to If I Had a Million, which is from 1932. It is out on Kino Lorber Video. Get that one for your collection, definitely. All right, let's go around the horn. Let's find out what is going on around the area. At the Tibbs Drive-In. This weekend, on screen one, you have two chances. So you have Barbie at 9:25, they say. No Hard Feelings at 11:35. And then at 1:30, they're showing Barbie again. So that's screen one. Screen two, man, Oppenheimer and Asteroid City. Screen three, Insidious, The Red Door, Cobweb, and Terrifier. And then on screen four, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning 1, and then Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So, man, there's a lot happening over at the Tibbs this weekend. At the Skyline Drive-In, they are going with Barbie and No Hard Feelings. And then on the 26th at the Skyline, Indie Sensations 2023 double feature, Spooky Dookie followed by Hell of the Evil Dead. That is happening on the 26th. And apparently on the 28th, a double feature will be Barbie, followed by Insidious The Red Door. So there you go on that. Over at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin on Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m. That's this week. The original Manchurian Candidate from 1962. 4 p.m. Sunday, it's a concert, the music of Gloria Estefan featuring the 90 Miles Band. Tuesday, July 25th at 10 a.m. is a part of the summer break series, The Lorax. And then Friday and Saturday, July 28th and 29th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., get your jorts and your volleyball, the original Top Gun. And then Friday, August 4th at 7:30 p.m., Heathers. It's so very. Saturday at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. is Cartoons for Cans. And then Saturday, August 5th at 7:30 p.m., Beverly Hills Cop. All of that is happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, Golden Globus Theater this week. They are doing John Wick. It's Griffmas in July, and they have thoughts about John Wick. I like the film a little better than they did, but I understand their concerns. So, yeah, go check out Golden Globus Theater. We start on Twitter. Let's grab a pencil, find out what you've been watching this week. We start with your Canadian girlfriend, who writes Marathon Man, Magic Cop, a Hong Kong film about a cop who uses supernatural spells to crack a drug ring using zombies, and Swamp Thing. Missy Rump writes, Missy, I love you. Hang in there, dear. Missy writes, Amadeus and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. The Film Yap's Chris Lloyd writes, Stephen Curry, underrated. Catch-22, Sky Point to Alan Arkin. Die Hard, Haunted Mansion, Earth Mama, and seeing the Barbenheimer double feature tonight. So I guess he already did that. okay, I can't read that. And then Allison writes, Nimona, a rewatch of Mad Max Fury Road. And my kid made us watch Lego Movie 2 about 9 times this week. Got my Barbie tickets for Sunday. Very good. So we flip over to Facebook, and Steven writes, two British noirs, It Always Rains on Sunday and Time Without Pity, both a bit soft for someone weaned on American noir, and Nimona, which is terrific. Lou Harry writes, woke up at 4:30, couldn't sleep, and for some reason I can't figure out now, I watched A Rainy Day in New York. I hope you got back to sleep there, Lou. David writes Ant-Man and the Wasp and Bullet Train. Abdul Hakim Shabazz, I got to get him back on here, writes A Dial of Destiny. Amanda, I got to see Amanda at the Much Ado screening at Can-Can on Sunday, so good to see her. And, of course, Amanda went to the library, watched The Squid and the Whale, which was fun to watch with my kid. We still quote that film from time to time. She also saw Stardust, Pfeiffer and De Niro, The Miracle Club, or as I call it, Enchanted April Meets Doubt. So thank you, Amanda. Paige, again, tell me what you have seen, not what you're going to see. But I'm going to trust Paige saw Oppenheimer a couple of days, yesterday. Taylor writes, Dogma, The Flash, White Heat, Amsterdam, and Baby Snakes. Nancy writes, Almost Famous. Doug writes, Le Cachefot, Heat, 1995, Bros, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Wham, that's the documentary, and Season 2 of The Bear. Dustin writes, Cool Hand Luke, The Reavers, Goodbye, the original Goodbye Girl, and great performances, Chess in Concert from 2009. Thanks, Dustin. Mark writes, took advantage of in-flight entertainment to catch John Wick 4 and rewatch Blade Runner 2049. Whew. Hope you had a good flight there, Mark. Lori writes, most recently, Lady Bird, Dumplin', and Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Craig writes, Black Klansman. Patty writes, The Candidate and Tall Tale. Eric writes, First Views, Elia Kazan's Wild River and Joseph Losey's The Go-Between. Plus, The Invisible Man Returns, The Invisible Woman, and Invisible Agent, all from my Universal Invisible Man Legacy Collection. I have that one as well, Eric. I know exactly where you're going. His rewatches, The Man from Laramie, In the Cut, The Kane Mutiny, watch your strawberries, What's Up, Doc, and The Invisible Man, which I love The Invisible Man. So good. Spencer writes, not a film, but rather a 7-episode miniseries on Netflix called Midnight Mass that I found really well put together. Was proud of Netflix for not spoiling things in the description. I highly recommend. All right. Ken writes Dial of Destiny. He writes that in all caps. Rachel writes Hogfather and Dungeons and Dragons, much Honor Among Thieves. Maggie, who I got to see at the theater on Sunday as well. Much Ado About Nothing, which led me to Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet, as well as Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. Denise writes Sound of Freedom. Annie writes The Candidate and Tall Tale. Bet you watched that with Patty. David writes Howl's Moving Castle, Night of the Hunter, and Head, a.k.a. the Monkees movie. Kristen writes Army of the Dead, which is basically Dawn of the Dead plus Ocean's 11. Thank you. Kurt writes Indiana Jones in the Cinema, When Harry Met Sally for the Beltray Saturday Night film, I'll Have What She's Having. Brian writes First Time Viewings, X, Pearl, and Oppenheimer. There's a triple feature. JJ writes The Usual Random Assortment, Frost, absolutely terrible waste of time that wanted to be elevated horror, as well as High and Low from 1963. Helen writes Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning. Zechariah writes And the Ship Sailed On. Daniel writes Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Curse of the Jade Scorpion, Mommy Dearest, Barbra Streisand Divas, Weird Science, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Manhattan Murder Mystery, Playing for Time, A Shot in the Dark, and Licorice Pizza. Linda asks, Barbenheimer? Okay. Al writes, the Weird Al biopic. Weird came out on German Netflix, so I watched that. I didn't realize that Michael Jackson parodied Weird Al's Eat It to make his song Beat It. Opened my eyes. Very funny, sir. Linda writes Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Melissa writes Oppenheimer and the Haunted Mansion. Jamie writes Inferno, Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights, Lilo and Stitch, and the Stitch Movie. Gary writes The Return of Dr. Mabuse, Mission Impossible, and a Serbian film. Gregory writes Gangs of New York and Black Hawk Down. Kay writes Asteroid City. Catherine writes Barbie. Brian Hart says you were at both of them, so Oppenheimer and Much Ado About Nothing. Nick Rogers, happy birthday, buddy. They cloned Tyrone, JFK, Speed and Speed 2, as well as Oppenheimer. And finally, Kelly writes, The Magnificent Seven, both original and remake. So, of course, I was that guy saying, oh, you mean the Seven Samurai. She knew I was kidding. Kelly also watched A Hard Day's Night, Baby the Rain Must Fall, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Cool Hand Luke, The Hustler, and Rush Hour. And that's what you've been watching, folks. So that's what you've been doing to so hopefully you got to see some films that are good and new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Let me know if you go to the Oppenheimer Barbie double feature. Let me know if you do that. I'll ask obviously next week. And yeah, we'll do this again. Thanks for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan. Hi, Barbie.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!